Hi, my name is Richard, and I'm hosting the meeting today, and I'm very pleased to welcome John, who is going to be our speaker. So, John, the recording is on, and you're very welcome, and we'd love to hear from you.
Thank you. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic. What I've been asked to come along and talk a bit, so that's what I'll do. Do tell me if I'm talking for too long or about the wrong thing. But I was just going to tell you my story, if you like, and leave it there. So I've had to make a few notes because my memory is a bit iffy at times. But yes, anyway. So I've been in AA and then sober AA since 2013 now. And I've been sober since then, apart from a number of lapses, which I'll get onto later. I think it's probably fair to say that I was a late starter at drink. I had a pretty normal middle class English childhood. I was a bit academic. I wasn't bullied. I was pretty happy, quite good at school and things. But I didn't drink. I didn't like taste at all. And I went off to university, and I didn't drink at university, which is unusual, I suppose. But no, I didn't. I still didn't like it. I'd always, when I was a child, from about 10 onwards, wanted to be a nuclear physicist, which is a little bit different to a train driver, I suppose, or a fireman. And that's really what I went to physics to university to study, and I did that for a bit, and then I did another university degree because, well, I suppose you do another subject, and I still didn't drink. And then I went off to do my PhD, research PhD. And that's when I did actually start drinking, not because I was doing a PhD, but because the people I was associating with tended to be the professors, basically, and the other research students. And it was all very friendly, and people would go out to one of the country pubs and, they persuaded me to try some red wine one day because I'd said I didn't like drinking. Gave me some red wine, and much to my shock, it tasted nice. And I think the reason I had not really been interested in it before is when I'd my parents had a dreadful taste in wine. Basically, it was truly appalling. It was sweet, icky stuff, and this was proper red wine. So I soon got the hang of that, and being a bit obsessive. I set out to learn as much as I possibly could about wine. So, a year later, I knew all the vintages of Bordeaux and Burgundy and what goes with what and all that sort of stuff. And at that point, it was really on a Friday and Saturday night, I would either go out socially with people or we'd stay in socially and I'd probably share a bottle of wine. And that wasn't too bad. And that's how it went for a while. Anyway, I finally stopped studying at university when I was, gosh, 26, I think, because I'd run out of things I could study, and I left for the real world. I also got married. I'd had a girlfriend for a long time for university, and I ended up running a group for a credit risk management agency in London. A big American company. So I had to move to London and my wife had to move to London and find another job. And it was a reasonably demanding position. But, the drinking was still okay. I wasn't really drinking that much, a little bit more. One of the things that happened about then, which probably should have given me a clue, is I had my first injury through drink. I went to visit my parents-in-law with my wife, and I sat up with her father, who was a fairly heavy drinker, and he introduced me to cognac, and a bottle of cognac later, a guess I was in a very good state. I don't remember it, but apparently I slipped on a mat and fell backwards into a window and woke up in hospital with concussion and stitches and things. But I just thought, oh, well, that's a one-off. Little did I know. So after a couple of years doing this, I ended up doing what was really my profession. I became a management consultant. Management consultants basically travel around the world, meet interesting people, and fire them. Well, actually, no, we try and fix things. So I joined a management consultancy, and from then on, I discovered I spent most of my weeks in a hotel somewhere, and then I come home at weekends. And because there's a lot of client entertaining and a bit of a drinking culture, we'd be drinking. If I was back in the office, Fridays were a big day. Everyone would go to the bar downstairs at the office and stay there for hours. But when I was away in hotels, the whole teams would get together and we'd have a few drinks. So I was drinking most days of the week that time, not excessively, but I was drinking. So it had kind of gone up a bit, if you like. And you know how it is, your career progresses. I moved to a bigger, more prestigious management consultancy, and I spent the next 7 years working around the world in Europe, Middle East, Africa, and the Far East. It was quite a pressure job. You were expected to work long hours and weekends. Typically, the hours would be 12 to 14 hours a day with the clients, but in return for that, you got paid wheelbarrows of money, which at that time seemed a good thing. And it seemed very glamorous. You know, somebody would turn up in a car on a Monday morning to chauffeur me to an airport. I'd get on the first class flight. Somebody would chauffeur me at the other end. I'd spout all sorts of things at various important people at the companies. They disagree, and this would go on, and that's what it was like. And it all seemed terribly glamorous and wonderful, and I did like being paid the money. But there was a lot of drinking involved at that point because, well, we were always taking people out for fancy dinners. The company paid for everything. If you were somewhere a long time, they'd get you a very nice flat or house if you wanted. And instead of a hotel, they'd pay for pretty much everything. And yeah, I was drinking every day, and it was about that time I think I started drinking alone. Before, it had always been a bit sociable, or with my wife at home, a bottle of wine. But when I was posted to Bangkok to run a project, a big project for a telecoms company, I had a very nice flat there, and I took to drinking dry martinis in the evening because it seemed suitably sophisticated. You can't be an alcoholic if you're drinking fancy gin from a crystal glass. You know, alcoholics are those people you see on the street, aren't they? Underneath paper with cans of special brew or something. You know, this was sophisticated. And because I didn't come home at weekends for several weeks, so it's quite a long way to Bangkok, it turns out, I would drink at weekends as well. And by the time I come back, and I was working in Europe and coming home every weekend, I was drinking quite a lot, most weeknights. And this went on. I did that for 7 years, and I got a bit fed up of travelling. And I went to my final management consultancy, another very good one, who headhunted me to work in England. As I live in England, it was quite nice to work in the same continent. Previously, my record was I'd spent 13 nights 1 year in my own bed. I'd been traveling so much. To be fair, about 3 weeks of that other time, I was on holiday with my wife somewhere, which is why I went. But it was, you know, pretty full on, and I was, you know, quite isolated. And I spent a year in Bangkok, a year in Prague, 6 months in Dubai, South Africa, Paris, Bonn, Dublin, Sofia. I did 35 countries basically, and it's all quite hostile. So the drinking kept going. I did reasonably well. I got headhunted to this final one to work in Britain. So great, I did that. I ended up being on the path to becoming a director And that was a bit of a big thing. And it's very pressured. So you work even more hours and you have to manage multiple projects and do all sorts of schmoozing. And I was drinking more and more. I think it would be fair to say I was drinking about a bottle of wine equivalent a day and the odd cocktail. In 2010, I had a couple of strokes, not particularly big ones. I was limping about for a bit, but I didn't actually recognize them as strokes. I thought I was having burnout or whatever it is you get when you have one of these fancy jobs and stuff. And I put the limping down to some physiotherapy I was having on my back because I'd done something to my back. But they had a bit of an effect. They made it very difficult to do my job. I could no longer think as well as I could before, rather strangely. And really odd things started happening. I can remember getting lost on my way to the station. And I'd driven to the station every day. I just couldn't remember where I was. And I had to stop and just think where I was. And then 5 minutes later, I remembered and I drove to the station. And I forgot how to cross a road on one occasion, which was really weird. I was standing at this road and all these cars in London zipping past. And I couldn't remember. Anyway, that wasn't good. And as you can imagine, trying to manage big projects in that state were not good. And I got pretty depressed and I drank more because, well, drink kind of made it easier. And so drinking more. But of course, that meant the thinking was even harder. And yeah, basically, I had a full-blown, what used to be called mental breakdown on Wokingham Station, of all places, on my way to a big client meeting. It was horrible. I couldn't stop crying for no reason. It was just ghastly. So I went off sick, drank a lot, saw some doctors. Not about the drink. I didn't feel I had a drink problem. And after 6 months, went back to work, and I didn't last a day before it kind of all went wrong again in a mental health front. So I quit. I didn't want people to know. I didn't want to end up doing a bad job and have people thinking I was a flake and all that. I just wanted to go, you know, go while my record was good, which probably wasn't sensible because I basically wanted immediate severance rather than lots of, you know, help I'd have got from them otherwise, but I did that. And I was lucky that my wife had a fairly good job. So, and I'd been so busy, we'd never bought one of those silly huge houses that change you to a mortgage. We got a fairly normal house. So I could afford to work. And my wife was all behind it, which was quite unhappy. After that, my drinking really took off. I was at home, you see, I could do stuff. Things I wanted. I got a bit bored. I took up. I'd always been very keen on photography and wildlife photography, and I got a photographic mentor, and I became a professional wildlife photographer eventually. Getting back to the travel bizarrely, but while I was doing that, there was plenty of opportunities to drink. My wife wasn't here. I was home alone, and by 2013, I was hiding bottles of booze all over the place. I couldn't remember where I'd hidden some of them. When I did stop drinking, I was finding half full and empty bottles for about 6 months in all sorts of weird places, in the garden, in the attic, under the sofa. But I was drinking nearly a bottle of spirits a day and lying on the sofa and passing out occasionally. And I'd set an alarm for before my wife got home from work so that I could get up. I'd drink a lot of coffee and I'd try and be coherent. And then when she came in, I'd open a bottle of wine and say, "Oh, I could do this." Pretend I hadn't been drinking, but anyway, it wasn't much good, and I got really, really depressed, and decided to kill myself, as you do. I got interrupted. I was going to say fortunately, but when you want a bit of peace and quiet, you can never get it, it turns out. So I'd taken the first set of drugs that I got to stop me being sick with the rest of them. And then I got a phone call, and then somebody turned up and all that sort of, and it became apparent what I was doing. So next thing, hospitals, doctors, lots of evaluations. It was clear I had a drinking problem. I was utterly broken. I mean, I just wasn't thinking straight. I mean, my career had gone, and I used to define myself by my career because probably I was a bit shallow. That had gone, and I was never going to buy a nice big house in the south of France to retire to without that career. And I was absolutely miserable. Depression's horrible. You just don't want to do anything. You just don't want to get out of bed. You don't want to talk. But I had some good doctors, and they sent me off. Well, my wife insisted I went to AA. So I went to a meeting, not knowing anything about it, a local meeting in person. And I got into it, and they obviously hadn't had anybody new in the meeting for a while, because there was a lot of chatter, and people were talking about what to do when newcomers arrived, and they decided they'd all go back to step one. I wasn't quite sure what step one was, or any step. But this was what they called a feelings meeting. And what seemed to happen is, after the chap at the front had done the introductions, they went round the room in the circle. It was laid out in the circle, and everybody shared about their experiences. And I guess because I was there, they all talked about a bit about their story and how they got better. And when it came to me, I had to talk, so I did, which I hadn't intended to do, and I really wasn't very comfortable doing it. I didn't find out till later that you can say pass, and it would have passed by me, but probably just as well. But they were all really, really nice and supportive, and I took on the tea making job, as you do, and I got a bit competitive about that. I started bringing in teapots and fancy tea and coffee makers, and I didn't get it. I mean, I thought at that point the thing was, I just need to stop drinking. I didn't realize, never occurred to me, and I was really slow at this, that I had to change. The drinking was a thing that happened, but I drank for reasons, and there were things that would keep me drinking if I didn't do anything about them. It took me about 2 years to work that out. I was sober for 2 years, and I was away on a wildlife photographic expedition, and I had some beer after 2 years, and I don't really drink beer, to be honest, so that was a bit odd. And I was mortified, 2 years sober, but I'd really just been doing that. I went to one meeting a week, didn't do anything between the meetings. So what did I expect? So I got a sponsor. The first sponsor, I was finding the religious bit a bit tricky in AA, because where I live, the meetings are, people will come and say, God did this for me quite a lot, and I've been watched over and all that sort of stuff, which I've been an atheist since I was nine, and I'm really strongly committed at atheist. I was finding that quite difficult. And my sponsor, we got to step three, and I sort of said, well, I've got a bit of a problem with this one, the whole religion, because I don't believe I'm handing my life over to anything. Anyway, after a few weeks of this, he got a bit fed up and sacked me, if you can be sacked by a sponsor, which was a bit annoying. I got another sponsor. He went AWOL after about 3 weeks, just disappeared. I'm hoping it's not necessarily a reflection of my character, but there you go. And I got another sponsor who's a lot better, and so on. But I found the religion thing really getting to me, and I got to the point where I was going to meetings, and I was getting really annoyed. I was at this time, I was actually doing proper work outside of meetings, going to several meetings a week, and working on the steps. But I was finding it really hard, and then I thought, what I did is, this was back in 2019, cutting into 20, yeah, 2019. There was a my sponsor at the time was also an atheist, and I come across the Geoffrey Munn book, which was out at that point. It was fairly new, I think, and I'd read it and I thought, well, this seems a bit more sensible. And I said to him, why don't we start a meeting based on this? Because, there are no meetings within easy reach. Nobody was on Zoom at that time. And rather than complain about stuff, why don't you try and, do it? And that's what we did. We started a meeting called Sober Without God, not very imaginatively, based on the Munn book, a step meeting where we were going going through the one book slowly every week. And then the pandemic hit just as we were starting, and with lots of people turned up. We thought, well, maybe one person will turn up, but it was a lot of people at that point. And we're still running the meeting Mondays. We run that every week, and it's good. Quite a nice meeting. And I've been basically doing bits on that ever since 2019. And we've started some other meetings as a result. We have a very relaxed fireside chat meeting, we call it, on the Thursday, that we take in turns to chair, and just people come and say how their week is with respect to alcohol. But Geoffrey Munn brought out his workbook. Now, I don't know if you've seen it. I imagine you have. And that struck us as quite good. So we started using it and making up little groups. We call them work groups because, again, lack of imagination. We get a group of people, typically four, together with one person who'd kind of been through the steps. We actually all get together online for an hour and a half, 2 hours a week, and we go through the steps and do the work in the workbook. And that's how I did my steps in the end, with a small group. And when I finish, I still meet the same group once a week. We've finished the steps, but we meet just to chat. And that's quite nice. We know each other very well. I graduated to running some of these work groups myself, and other people who came into the So without God meetings on Monday, they do it. So we've got about five running at the moment, people going through the steps, and they work quite well. In fact, what we find, and I don't know if this is typical, is people don't seem to get sponsors. The whole little group becomes a sponsor. They all kind of share and bond, and we have a WhatsApp group for each one. So that's quite nice. So that's worked quite well. So since 2013, I have had eight lapses. I've been lucky in that all but one have been for one day only. One was for 2 days. That's not great. I prefer never to have a lapse. And they are getting less and less. So maybe I'm finally getting there. I don't know. But certainly I am not drinking every day. If I drink one day a year, because something goes wrong, I figure that is better than the situation I was in when my life was in ruins and I was going to die one way or another. So yeah, that's where I am. That's Have I missed anything on here? No, that's about it. So yes, we still use Geoffrey Munn, not because because it's the book we found that we happen to think is the best one. We've tried a couple of others and they've not been as helpful, people have said. So we stick with Geoffrey Munn book, we do our meetings, I go to other meetings, I do a lot of work, and I have to work at it. I'm not one of those people where the cravings have gone away annoyingly. Every now and again, I will go somewhere and I'll get a craving. I don't go to supermarkets because I don't want to be tempted. But I go to a lot of meetings, it makes it easier. So that's my story for what it's worth. I don't know if that's what I was supposed to talk about, but that seems to be what I've talked about. So I'll be quiet now and let you do more useful things.
Thank you very much.